Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. It's no secret we all have dreams of being the next great social media influencer. I mean, why not, right? They're making serious bank. So what does it take to be an influencer and put a few more bucks in your bank account?
Millennial Money with Shauna Compton Game. It will expand your brain.
Hey, it's Shauna here with some really exciting news. You can now listen to our entire back catalog completely ad-free, exclusively on Stitcher Premium. Check out all your favorite episodes of Millennial Money, like how to finally master the art of budgeting. In addition to the Millennial Money archive, you can also listen to every new episode ad-free, as well as tons of other ad-free Wondery shows with hundreds of hours of original content, audio documentaries, and exclusive bonus episodes from some of your favorite podcasts. You can sign up now for a free month of Stitcher Premium by going to stitcherpremium.com/Wondery and using the promo code Wondery. Then once you're signed up, you just download the Stitcher app for iOS or Android and start listening. That's stitcherpremium.com/Wondery and promo code Wondery. Did you see the Netflix or the Hulu documentaries about the Fry Festival? We watched them and we were hooked. We kept looking at each other just with our mouths wide open because there's so much to learn from what happened there. In particular, I think how fascinated we all are with the influencer community. And let's face it, I think we all have a serious case of FOMO, whether it's Coachella or the Fry Festival, or you can basically fill in the blank, whatever it may be, whatever the latest, greatest event, we all want to go. So I couldn't wait to interview our guest today, Brendan Kane. Brendan is a serious, I'm talking serious, business and digital strategist for Fortune 500 corporations, brands, celebrities. Names like Taylor Swift, Rihanna, Charles Barkley, Zoe Saldana, and so many more. And get this, he is recently known for gaining 1 million followers in 100 countries in less than 30 days, which is pretty astounding. And of course, that helped him secure a publishing deal and led to his new book, 1 Million Followers. So I'm thinking Brendan can help us all brush up a little bit on our social influence. So, Brendan, I am so excited to have you join us on the podcast. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
This is a podcast episode I've been looking forward to. I actually have a lot of questions I want to ask you, but I thought to start off, you know, even thinking about just even 5 years ago, the idea of an influencer community and that you could actually make money as an influencer was still kind of crazy talk. But now you say the industry, it's expected to reach somewhere around $10 billion, which is crazy to me. I'd love to know what's happening. Why are we all so hooked on influencers?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, first off, it's really fun and fascinating for me to watch because I did the first ever influencer campaign on YouTube back in 2006 for a movie that I worked on. And that was before there was even a term called influencers. And we actually did that campaign for free. So to see,
wow,
we didn't have to pay the influencers for it because we created a unique opportunity for them. But to see that the level of scale that it's reached in such a short period of time is truly remarkable. And the reason that I think that there's so much scale and why there's so much revenue and the more and more companies and brands are using it is because it works. I mean, it works if you know how to use it. Like, One of the areas that people do go wrong is that they just get caught up in the numbers. They just say, oh, this person reaches 1 million people, so that means I'm going to sell a bunch of product, when it's more about finding the right influencer with the right audience. And when you do that, it can be very effective. And it's no different than somebody sponsoring a professional athlete or a television actor or a film actress. It's basically the same thing. It's somebody that has an audience that pays attention to the content that they produce or likes them for a specific skill set that they have or tone of voice, whatever it may be. And they tune into those people and they listen to those people and trust those people. So to me, like, influencer marketing is just the extension of what traditional endorsements have been for a very long time, for 50, 60 years, maybe even longer than that.
Yeah, for sure. That's such a good point. And I'd love to know, when you were working for that entertainment company and coming up with this influencer campaign, were you just like, well, let's just try this. This might be weird, or maybe this just really works. Like, what was the thought behind that?
Yeah. So it was for a movie called Crank with Jason Statham. And it was a smaller budget film. I think it was like 8 or 9 million. And compared to other films, they typically, films have a huge marketing budget, and this one had a pretty small one. So we needed to get really crafty and hustle the marketing aspect of it to really maximize the audience. And I was just seeing that there was these people on YouTube that had a huge audience, and I was like, listen, if these people are getting millions of people and they have a million subscribers and people paying attention to them, why shouldn't we reach out and connect with them? And to me, like, the way that I approach anything in business is, what is your value proposition? What makes you unique and different? So I messaged like 50 of the top YouTube influencers at the time. And I just said, hey, listen, do you want to interview a movie star? And most of these people hadn't been approached by movie studios and stuff. Cause this is back in 2006. Since then, like, every studio is working with influencers and trying to get them to private events and parties and premieres. But at the time, it was a very novel thing. So I think that the higher ups at the studio didn't really know what to make of it, but they understood the concept that there was these people that reached millions of viewers. So let's try and tap into it. So I think that there was a little, I don't want to say hesitation, but there was a little lack of clarity of whether it would be a super successful campaign or not, but people were behind it. And we thought that it did make sense, and it ended up working really well for the film and for films after that.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like such a no-brainer, but so cool that you were
sort of a part of that revolution, if you will. And, you know, we can't talk about influencer community without me talking about the Fry Festival documentaries, which I'm sure you watched. And my gosh, my husband and I, we were just watching and we kept looking at each other with just bright wide eyes, like, oh, what is going on? There's like so much to dissect in this. But, you know, from your point of view, like what went wrong? Like, what did we learn from the Fry Festival when it comes to influencers?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is I actually have a different perspective on it. I would look at it from what went right. Like to me, like, yes, they obviously did not pull it off. And the main guy did come off as a con artist and probably is a con artist. I do firmly believe that they went into that trying to pull off an event and just didn't realize how difficult it was.
Yeah.
But to me, like, I think it's a perfect case study in somebody that's amazing at marketing. Like the fact that they pulled that off and that marketing campaign that they did, I mean, it was brilliant. Like they did a great job. So to me, like, go look at how they structured that campaign and try and learn something from it. Now, I will say that they're obviously, the government is cracking down on influencers in terms of having to state that you're getting paid for a post, which I firmly, strongly believe in, that you should have to do that. Do I believe that those influencers should be responsible for that event? No. I mean, because you do not see that in traditional endorsements. So, for example, I don't know if you're a big college basketball fan, but
yes,
Zion Williamson is like the huge superstar. And he was wearing Nike shoes and the Nike shoes exploded on the floor and he got injured because of that. And he was wearing an NBA player, Paul George's shoe. Paul George isn't getting sued from that. Like he's not responsible for Nike producing a shoe that doesn't, you know, hold up. That's Nike's responsibility. And I think that's the same here. Like, yes, an influencer should try and pay attention and make sure that they're not promoting something that they don't believe in or is something that's harmful, but they didn't know what was happening with this event. So that's kind of the way that I look at it. I have a little bit of a different perspective of those documentaries and what happened.
Yeah, I think that's a great perspective as well, because you can look at it like, look what they were trying to pull off and look at all of the people who just wanted to be there. I mean, they would spend their last dollar to be there. This was something that they had to be a part of. So from that perspective, it was brilliant to be able to create something and just have people like, you know, throwing themselves at trying to get tickets and trying to be there. So yeah, I think from that perspective, you're right. It's super interesting.
I don't condone anything that they did. I mean, they had multiple times to come clean and refund money or be clear to their investors and to the people that are buying tickets. But to me, what happened, you know, I don't buy into what they did was right. But to me, it's a learning experience. And instead of just saying, look at how horrible this is, it's let's look at what we can learn from this from a marketing perspective.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk a little smaller. I run my own business, of course, and so many other listeners do. It's certainly a millennial trend, whether you're side hustling or you have your own gig. And your recent book, 1 Million Followers, you talked about how you gained 1 million followers in 30 days, which is certainly impressive. But I'd love for you, like, give us maybe like the cliff note version or the masterclass version. Like, how do we, if we're small fish in the sea, how do we do the same? And should we even be focused on that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So first, where I start really is with a mindset. It's like, why are you doing this? Why do you want to generate followers? Whether that's 1 million followers, 10,000 followers, 50,000 followers, and really defining what does that return on investment look like for yourself. And return on investment doesn't have to necessarily be financial. It can be, for example, for me, generating 1 million followers in 30 days, it was to secure a literary agent, then get a publishing deal, get the book published and speak around the world. And from all of that, you can generate press and other opportunities. So it's really critically important to understand why you're doing it. And the reason it's critically important is it's hard work. It takes time. It takes effort. It takes resources. And I find that when you know why you're doing something, when you have an end goal in mind, that helps fuel you past the difficult times or when it gets hard or it gets frustrating, because that will happen. It even happens for somebody like me that's been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, for sure. Did you have any like a whole game plan set up of how you were going to go after? Or was it just like, okay, I'm going to go for this crazy, try and get 1 million followers in 30 days?
Yeah, it's a great question. The answer is no. So I started working on these set of testing methodologies and processes prior to this. So I had been working on them for about 3.5 years for some of my celebrity clients and corporations. So I had first off, I knew I could do it before I went into it. It wasn't like, can I do it? It's like, I know I can do it. And I knew it was a strong enough hook point to get a literary agent and a publishing deal. And that was really the inspiration behind it. So I had had a lot of experience in doing this prior, and I knew that I could do it based upon the previous tests and data that that I did for other clients. And so when it came down to do it, it was really just coming down to execution.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And certainly having done it in the past gives you a huge, huge leg up. But also for thinking about the listeners, for side hustlers, entrepreneurs, what sort of advice would you give us to set ourselves up to work with brands and maybe even make money as an influencer? Are there certain things we should be focusing on?
Yeah, definitely. First and foremost, understanding, and this kind of like, it seems common sense, but some people don't, is like, who are the advertisers you want to target? And who are those advertisers currently working with? And what type of themes and stories are they working with those influencers on? Because let's just say that you want to work with Nike or Adidas, and they're all about, and this is an extreme example, but just to kind of give it some context, let's just say that Nike and Adidas, all they sponsor is fitness athletes, and you're an inspirational speaker, but you want to work with Nike. So how are you going to make that transition or that correlation? You've got to think about it from how are you going to pitch yourself to an entity or to a brand that you want to pre-existingly work with, that it makes it easy for them to say yes. And that really comes down to how well you can position yourself and position the content so it's a match for that brand. Because a brand is not going to put their dollars into anybody's pocket or behind any content unless it matches their audience and unless it matches their tone of voice. So really getting very strategic about making a list of those brand advertisers and getting very clear on the content that resonates with their audience and their brand so it matches up when you're ready for that.
Yeah,
I would say that that's one element.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah, and then just another one is, what makes you different? What makes you unique? Because you don't want to be the same. Like, let's just say you are a fitness influencer. There's tens of thousands of other fitness influencers out there. If you're an author, motivational speaker, whatever, you're competing against so many other people. So what is your differentiating factor? What makes you unique? And sometimes that can just be pure audience size. Sometimes it can just be the level of content that you're producing, the unique aspect of your tone of voice, whatever that may be.
Everyone knows that putting money aside in savings is really important. But then what? Should you keep your savings locked in a CD for a higher rate or keep them liquid in a money market? Can your checking account help you save too? Or is it about creating the right combination? We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about the savings options that are right for you. Learn more at sandyspringbank.com. Member FDIC.
I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/etm for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/etm to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/etm. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, EarnIt provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. EarnIt is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the EarnIt app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use EarnIt in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make EarnIt a part of your financial routine and join EarnIt's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about EarnIt, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download EarnIt today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIt app, type in Talkin' Money under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. EarnIt is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated, all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/etm. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial. So much good stuff for Brendan. We'll get back into the episode after an Ask Shauna from Sarah. And Sarah says, hi, Shauna. I'm hooked on the Millennial Money podcast. Thank you so much for helping me get my SHIT together when it comes to money. I live in Chicago, and although it's not the most expensive city, it isn't cheap if you want to live a good life. If I'm honest, I don't like to cut back very often. I go to the gym, go out with my friends, enjoy happy hour, love taking in the city on the weekends, and I also love to travel. I know, typical millennial, right? I don't really have a question. I'm just writing in to tell everyone how my thinking around money changed last year after tuning into your show and how that has helped me have an awesome 2018 and a great start to 2019. I realized I was angry at how I was raised and how my parents talked to me about money, aka they didn't talk. I was also angry at a relationship I was in where my partner always made a comment about everything that I spent money on and made me feel like I was dumb and I didn't know what I was doing. I'm no longer in that relationship. Thank you very much. You gave me confidence to write down my feelings and really think about how I view money. Doing so, I realized a lot of things I was holding on to, and it was really an interesting exercise. I highly encourage anyone listening who might resonate with my story to do the same. Write it out. Think about it. Think what's holding you back from your goals. The answer has to be more than just money, I believe, because it was for me. Now I feel happy when I get paid, and I feel happy when I make good choices with my money, even happy when I blow my money. I feel in charge, and honestly, I would have paid you $1 million to feel that way. I'm trying to spread the love to my friends and just wanted to share, so thank you. You're a friend to me, and you don't even know it. Wow, Sarah, that is so awesome. Thank you for writing that in. I feel honored that you were able to use something from the podcast that I spoke about or that a guest spoke about for your benefit to help like really change your life. But it wasn't me though. And I'm going to say that over and over. So if you're listening and you think I have some sort of magical spell or I've heard a lot of things. It's not me. It was all you. You rolled up the sleeves and you did the hard work. And so many of us have gunk. I mean, I could use really bad words, but you get the idea with gunk, just trash buildup from the past. I think that's influencing our money thinking and patterns. And that really needs to be thrown out because I think it's holding a lot of us hostage. It held me hostage for so many years. And I watched that hold other people hostage and people in all different facets of life. Older people, younger people, people making a lot of money, people not making a lot of money. So I feel like I can speak to it with some sort of educated information, some sort of educated response, just because I've seen that happen. So a long time ago on podcasts years ago, I talked about this exercise called financial forgiveness. And maybe this is the one that you use, Sarah. Maybe you just coined your own exercise. And if you did, that's so incredibly awesome. But I call it financial forgiveness for a reason, because I think that so many of us have, whether it's relationships, it's from our parents, or it's things that maybe we feel jealous about with our friends we don't even know about. Maybe it's our own insecurities. Maybe we've been held back at work. I don't know, whatever it may be. We all have these things that just build up in us, and they can fester inside of us if we don't go through some sort of exercise to get rid of them. And a lot of people might argue with me and say, this is like some
mumbo jumbo, some crazy talk that you're saying to me, Shauna. But again, I know this to be true because I've done it myself. I've helped other people do this. And there is definitely something to be said for this exercise. So you can do any variation of this that you want. But what I suggest is you either open up a new Word doc in your computer or get out a piece of paper. I think writing something down is like ultra, ultra therapeutic. And I hate the way I write. Like I've forgotten how to write cursive. So I write something in between cursive and non-cursive and I can barely read my writing. But anyway, write down the stuff that just without even thinking, the stuff that just pisses you off when it comes to money, the stuff that you're upset about, or maybe that keeps happening over and over again in your situation or whatever it is, just write all that stuff down for 5 minutes. Start a timer on your phone, 5 minutes, just don't even judge yourself. And when you're done, when the 5 minutes is over, read it all back. And I guarantee it's going to like evoke some sort of feelings in you. Hopefully it's some sort of like fight back feelings. Like, you know what? No, all this crap that's on that piece of paper, you are not owning my life. You are not owning my future. I'm owning my future. And then do whatever you want to do with a piece of paper. I highly suggest burning that thing in a safe, very safe way. But if you want to just shred it, cut it up, throw it away, whatever you want to do, it's the act of getting rid of that mentally, as silly and ridiculous as it may sound. It really does something to you. Now, if you want to take that to the higher degree, do that every week or every month or every other month or every 6 months, do it some sort of repetition, because it's not just like going to therapy once. It's you don't get fixed once. And I'm not saying you need fixed. I'm just saying this stuff builds and builds and builds. It's just natural. It's how we go through life. So go through this process often. Get rid of this stuff. Write down the stuff that pisses you off and then be done with it and say, you know what? I'm in control of my money. I'm in control with what I do with what's in my bank account. I can positively direct it in ways that can help me fulfill an amazing future. And you have to positively tell yourself this stuff so that when the bumps come along, they don't throw you off track. So I know that was a very long-winded answer to your response, Sarah. I'm not even going to say question, but thank you so much for being honest and for sharing that with me, because I think so many of us feel that exact same way. And I'm just so stoked that this worked for you, that it's working for you, and that you're having a kick-ass year because you actually took the time to think about these things.
Yeah, and of course it would make sense if you're a celebrity or someone who's fairly well known through, you know, some other, whether you're an author or in movies or whatever it may be, a musician. But is it still feasible for somebody who has a loyal following but a smaller following to reach out to brands to pitch themselves if they're following these kind of guidelines? Or is it something that maybe bigger brands wouldn't pay attention to you until you get to a certain echelon?
It's a great question. It really depends. And what it depends on, again, is what is different about you? What is unique about you? Because, for example, you could be like, I don't know why it's popping into my head, but I think it was a Nike commercial where there was this, I think he was missing his legs, this climber that climbed Everest, with no legs. And to me, that is like a unique, powerful story that really builds into Nike's brand. But I don't believe that he has a huge following. But the way that his story is so unique and so different and so inspiring makes Nike want to work with somebody like that. And obviously, that's the extreme case of it. But if you are a smaller influencer, I do believe that you can still work with bigger brands and bigger clients. It's really about why would they want to work with you? Because at the end of the day, you have to be providing value to the brand to make them want to say, yes, I want to work with you, and secondarily want to pay you. Now, are they going to pay you the same amount of money as a big celebrity or big athlete? Probably not. But that doesn't mean that you can't warrant that. Now, if you've only got like a few thousand followers, yeah, probably not. But like even if you get like 10, 15, 25, it's still a decent number. And the trend of using micro influencers is growing dramatically, and the value has been established. So again, like I think it's definitely feasible. It's just making sure that when you're reaching out, you're distinguishing yourself above all others and making yourself unique.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point. And I love that you shared that example of the commercial, because I certainly know from things that I've done, opportunities I've had, it really is, you know, what makes me different, unique, and sharing that story, like creating a visual around why I'm different. And I think we don't focus enough on that. We're so focused on trying to get the paycheck or the big deal that we lose that really important piece, because we are essentially selling ourselves to whichever brand this is.
Yeah. Like another example that popped in my head was Felix Baumgartner. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. He did the deal with Red Bull, the guy that did skydiving from space.
Oh, yes.
And he did not have a big social following, but Red Bull invested a tremendous amount of money into that. And they invested it because it was a strong hook point. It was very unique and different. And that's why they wanted to work with him. And that's why they were willing to invest a tremendous amount of money to pull that off. And I think it was years in the making. This isn't something that just happened right away. So I'm just using that as an example to say, like, there's no one size fits all. Just because you're small doesn't mean you can't work with the big players. It's really just, how can you, like, what makes you stand out that makes them want to invest in content or an experience?
Yeah, such a great point. So I'd love to know your own career money journey. So you were working in entertainment and, you know, developed this whole influencer career, I guess you would say. So how has your own career journey shaped from there?
So starting off in entertainment industry, I worked for two movie studios overseeing theatrical releases of films ranging from $1,500 million budgets, allowed me to work with all these actors and directors and how to further syndicate their brand online as well. And then from there, I just knew I wanted to explore the world as an entrepreneur. And that's when I left and started building technology platforms and going back and licensing them to big media companies. So I built platforms for Viacom, Vice, MTV, Yahoo, Lionsgate. And specifically, the MTV and Viacom partnerships opened up the opportunity to work with some of the largest celebrities on the planet. So that's where I got to build technology platforms for Taylor Swift and Rihanna and a few others. And I just kind of, over the past, 15 years, just been doing this and working with big brands and corporations and celebrities. And I just got to a point where I realized that I love sharing knowledge and information. I love speaking. I love running workshops. I love running my private mastermind group and just teaching people. And that's where I started to focus around building my brand and really understanding what it took to create a brand from scratch. And obviously the first part of it was building 1 million followers in 30 days, but there's been a lot of work since then, because that was about a year ago, and constantly building and evolving my brand, my content, and learning as much as possible about how to engage people with somebody that is not on television or film or professional athlete or rock star, because that's kind of the space that I came from.
Yeah, I love that. What do you think has been the hardest part about making the shift to entrepreneur?
It's funny. Like, I think working a desk job is harder than being an entrepreneur sometimes. Just because I just get so bored sitting behind a desk. It just doesn't work for me. I admire people that can do it. Sometimes I feel like my life may be easier, but like I don't even have a choice. Like I will never work a desk job again. Like I'll go live on the beach in the Philippines before I do that. So I think the toughest part of being an entrepreneur is that people don't realize that the emotional roller coaster that you're on. I say that you have the highest highs and the lowest lows. And for me, I've been doing it so long that when something really bad happens, maybe it takes me a few hours to recover from it and move on. When I first started, it could take days. And I think that that's one of the hardest adjusting periods of how difficult it can be, because you live and die by your own efforts. And sometimes when something falls through, like, it causes you to lose a significant portion of revenue. And versus where if you make a mistake in working in a corporation, generally there is some leeway there and you're not worried about losing your paycheck. Now, yes, you can get fired for stuff, but it's usually not the level of extremes of being an entrepreneur. But at the same time, it's the most rewarding thing. It's like I get to build things and create things every day. And that's what really fuels me and what I'm passionate about.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I always tell people I'm allergic to fluorescent lights. And they look at me like, you know, perplexed. I'm like, no, I'm not the type of person that likes to work in a corporation under fluorescent lights and do the same thing every day. But some people are really good at that. That's what they're called to do. It's just not in my blood. So I always love to hear about entrepreneurs' journeys and the things they struggle with and the things that are really easy for them, because I think those are important things to share.
That's so funny because I tell people I'm allergic to offices.
I love it. We need to get official membership cards, I think, right?
Yeah, the No Office Club.
Yeah, so I'm curious, do you have maybe one or two like of your favorite social media tricks or tips that you could share with us?
I would say the first one is, and we've covered this a little bit, but competitive analysis is really looking at the people that are currently speaking to your audience and doing an analysis of their content and finding out what content formats, themes, stories are working for them, and also what's not working for them. Because I think people just go in with this preconceived notion, all I've got to do is create content and post it, and it's all automatically going to work. And it just doesn't work that way. So we do, for myself and for the clients we work with, we do a tremendous amount of analysis of studying other people's content, how they're producing it, what's working, what's not working, and then applying it to ourselves, to our social channels, which then plays into the second one, which is all about testing and learning. Like that's the biggest thing. It's what drives all success, not just on social media, but the social platforms themselves, like Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat, all these companies. The reason they're successful is they're constantly iterating, they're constantly learning, they're testing and figuring out what works and what doesn't work. And the same thing applies when creating a social following and creating social content. It's really testing and learning and seeing what works, what's generating the intended response from the audience that you're trying to reach.
Yeah, that makes such sense. What do you think? So we started out talking about how big the influencer community has grown to. What do you think is going to happen over the next few years? I mean, is this just going to get bigger and bigger, or is there a point where it starts to plateau a bit?
I think it's at that point right now. I think it's going to plateau. I think really right now it's in an evolution phase. And this phase has been around for, I think, like 2 years, where it's becoming more about transparency and efficiency. People are getting less and less caught up in the huge numbers and more caught up in what's working versus what's not working. So like, I think there may be some growth, but I honestly see it plateauing because it's just grown so fast at this point in time. Now, that's not to say that it can't evolve into something else, like another facet of influencer marketing. But I kind of feel like at least this iteration of it has plateaued and it's kind of resetting itself. And the industry and the brands and the corporations are trying to figure out where the most efficient uses of dollars towards influencers go. And then possibly once that gets really dialed in and you see a big increase in conversions and effectiveness, then maybe you see another growth spurt from there.
Yeah, I think you're right on. That definitely makes sense. I mean, it just feels like there's influencers everywhere. So I'm super interested to see what will happen. Well, this has been awesome. So many great gems we've talked about, but I'd love if we could leave the listeners maybe with one thing to remember when they're trying to grow their social following and step into that influencer category. Maybe something we haven't talked about. Like, what would you want them to remember?
Well, the first thing to remember is, why are you doing it? And make sure that you write it down or figure out why you're doing what you're doing and allow that to fuel your decision going forward. And then secondarily, one thing, because I was just speaking to a big group of people that were similar in a similar vein, just starting out or trying to scale, is find somebody that you trust, I'm not going to say trust, but you find somebody that is in this space that's constantly learning that you can learn from. Somebody that, because the problem that you have today is that there anybody can open a social account and post content. So everybody claims they're a social media expert. And I always get so mad when I hear about people saying there's only one way to do it and this is the way to do it, because that's the only way they know how to do it. Find somebody that you can learn from, either reading their books, podcasts, videos, whatever it may be, that is constantly learning, constantly testing things and challenging themselves, because things change all the time. Like Instagram growth changes, Facebook growth, YouTube growth, all of them change the dynamics of it. And you really need to get tapped into a source that is constantly evolving, iterating, learning, and knowing what's going on. Because without that, you're going to really struggle over the long term to make it successful.
Such great advice. Wow. Awesome. Well, tell the listeners where they can go to grab a copy of your book. And if they want to connect with you, how do they do that?
Yeah. So the book is sold in all major retail stores and on Amazon. There's a website called 1millionfollowers.com that has more information on it. People can direct message me on Instagram at Brendan Kane, or they can email b@seekers.com. So they can, you know, reach out with any questions. I also have like a private group that meets twice a month where we just go over all these strategies and constantly share knowledge and learn and teach. So,
hey, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Remember to subscribe to the podcast. It's absolutely free, and you'll make sure you never miss an episode of Millennial Money. You can also listen to all our episodes on Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, and Pandora.